From Pacifico Radio, this is Democracy Now! The confirmation hearings of Republican William Cohen as the new defense secretary begin today. We'll talk about Cohen, Madeleine Albright, and military mergers.
Bill Cohen never met a weapon system he didn't like. That's good news for Boeing and Lockheed Martin and bad news for the rest of us.
And in an unprecedented act, the House reprimands and fines Speaker Newt Gingrich.
We can't have it both ways. We can't say that he pled guilty but he didn't do anything. And for those people who want to pursue outside issues, I beg them not to think about doing it. If you want to investigate who was coercing members of the committee, then maybe we'll investigate who asked them how they were going to vote on the question of Speaker. Who's talking about taxes? The Ethics Committee had no right to go into tax issues. That's for the Internal Revenue Service. That's for the Federal Bureau of Investigation. And they have the responsibility to do that. The Speaker's intelligent. He's an intellectual. He read the charges. He said he brought discredit upon this House. For God's sake, let's get on with it.
All that and more coming up on Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! Welcome to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. Police say a blast this morning in downtown Washington was near but not at a Planned Parenthood clinic less than a mile from the White House. The explosion went off at about 7:45 Eastern Standard Time, causing no visible damage. No injuries have been reported. Meanwhile, Washington police say a suspicious package was found outside the Mayflower Hotel two blocks away. First Lady Hillary Clinton and Vice President Gore are due to attend a luncheon for abortion rights supporters at the hotel today. Today is the 24th anniversary of the Supreme Court ruling legalizing abortion. And the abortion clinic in Tulsa, Oklahoma has reopened days after a bomb shattered windows and sent shrapnel into the walls. The blast rocked the reproductive services clinic last Sunday. The clinic has been the site of several protest break-ins and vandal attacks since it opened in 1974, including a firebombing January 1st that caused minor damage. The Army has charged a fourth instructor in its investigation of sexual abuse complaints at the Aberdeen Proving Ground. Sergeant First Class Theron Brown, a maintenance instructor at the U.S. Army Ordnance Center and School, was charged last week with adultery and sodomy involving two female trainees and one female civilian, this according to the Army. And according to the New York Times today, months before a woman cadet dropped out of the Citadel, her parents repeatedly told academy officials she was being harassed. In one case, the school reduced the charge against a male cadet who had shoved a piece of cardboard into the face of the woman, Jeannie Mantavlos, according to federal court records obtained by the newspaper. The testimony at a January 8th hearing, part of the Justice Department's oversight of the integration of women at the previously all-male military school, conflicts with Citadel officials' claims that they reacted promptly to Metavlos's complaints. The parents of Metavlos, who dropped out along with one of the other three women cadets, say they told officials beginning in September about the abuse. A man who murdered a prison guard with a homemade knife came within an hour of execution before a federal appeals court gave him another chance to plead for his life, this in Parchman, Mississippi. Willie C. Russell was scheduled to die by injection at 12:01 this morning, but a three-judge panel of the 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals ordered a stay of execution. Dairy farmers across the country say they're hurting from a steep drop in milk prices. To protest the plummeting prices, thousands of farmers are expected to dump their milk or give it to charity in a one-day dairy strike. Farmers in Wisconsin, Minnesota, Vermont, Pennsylvania, New York, Missouri, Texas, California, and New Mexico are to take part in today's action. And this labor news from South Korea. In a challenge to President Kim Il-sung, opposition parties today rejected his offer to reopen debate on a new labor law as the nation's top strike leader led a protest march through Seoul. Park Sun-suk of the main opposition National Congress for New Politics says a meeting of officials from her party and the United Liberal Democratic Party decided any debate in parliament would occur only on the condition that the law is first revoked. Separately, union leader Kwon Young-kil left Myeongdong Cathedral to lead 4,000 workers in a noisy protest march over the law after a partial response from workers to a strike call. and several shots were heard early today at the Japanese ambassador's residence in Lima, where rebels hold 73 VIP hostages. The shots were immediately followed by silence. Police surrounding the residence moved into a state of alert, but did not approach the compound. Police said the detonation sounded like shots from an AKM assault rifle. And this news from Washington, the House voted 395-28 to reprimand its speaker. This is an unprecedented act, and we'll have more on this story later in the show. Meanwhile, the Democratic Party has set new rules on campaign funds it will accept. In a move aimed at quelling criticism over some of the detonations it took during last year's race, the party said it would hold all contributors to $100,000 a year and accept money only from U.S. citizens. It also offered to stop taking soft money if the Republicans agreed to do the same. Clinton said that the GOP raises much more of such unregulated funds, but that Democrats take all the heat. The Democrats also installed Colorado Governor Roy Romer as their new general chairman. Massachusetts businessman Steve Grossman will run day-to-day affairs. And you're listening to Democracy Now! Former Republican Senator William Cohen goes before his former colleagues in the Senate today for confirmation hearings to replace outgoing Defense Secretary William Perry. He's expected to win the nomination easily, and the Pentagon says that he could be sworn in as early as this afternoon. But despite the Senate Armed Services Committee's casual attitude, Cohen's nomination comes at a time of profound changes in both the military-industrial complex at home and the role of U.S. troops abroad. Huge military contractors like Boeing and McDonnell Douglas are merging into ever larger conglomerates. The Pentagon is awarding huge contracts like the $750 billion deal to build more jet fighter planes, and abroad NATO is expanding rapidly, pushing right up against the borders of Russia. Today we look at some of these major transformations underway in the military. Our guests are Gordon Clark, the director of the Washington, D.C.-based Peace Action, which is the largest grassroots peace organization in this country. And we're joined in our New York studio by William Hartung, the director of the Arms Trade Resource Center of the World Policy Institute. He's author of And Weapons for All and Star Wars, The Economic Fallout. Welcome both to Democracy Now!
It's good to be here.
Good morning, Amy. Morning, Bill.
Well, why don't we start with Bill Cohen's nomination, his confirmation hearings today, and then I want to ask you also a little about Madeleine Albright. Well, Bill Hartung, what about William Cohen?
Well, Bill Cohen has a reputation as a moderate, which is almost completely unfounded. It's based on the fact that he has opposed the B-2 bomber in the past. But if you look at practically every other weapon system, he's been leading the charge. He led the charge for a $15 billion loan guarantee fund so that we can export fighter planes and other weapons to dictators all over the world. Every time there's been a vote in the last 2 years to increase military spending, Cohen has voted yes. It doesn't matter if they want to add $10 billion, $20 billion. Strom Thurmond had a ridiculous proposal to add as much as $50 billion to the military budget, which was luckily defeated. Cohen was right there voting for more weapon systems. So this notion that's been circulated in the Wall Street Journal and elsewhere that Cohen's going to be this sort of moderating force on the Republicans in Congress and help Clinton get rid of a few unnecessary weapon systems is not really borne out by his recent record. He's a defense industry guy from day one. He's got a big shipbuilding company in his state, Bath Iron Works, which he's gone to bat for repeatedly. So unless he has a dramatic change in political coloration, we're not going to be able to expect much from him in terms of getting the Defense Department down to some kind of reasonable levels.
And Gordon Clark, any significance about the fact that he's a Republican, although more and more in Washington, it doesn't seem like there's much difference.
Oh, well, the warm swirl of bipartisanship is really overcoming the Capitol these days. No, I really don't think there's any significance, at least anything good that will come out of the fact that he is a Republican. I think the main issues are, as Bill pointing out, that this man is really someone who never has seen a weapon system he didn't like. And, you know, I would agree that the term moderate, if at most, is basically the mainstream punditry's attempt to create the illusion of debate here on issues when, in fact, there really is none. And I would even go further and say that it's even more disturbing, the voting record that Peace Action keeps on our senators. He's never gotten over 50% more than once in the past 12 years. His average is around 20%, and even worse than that is when the Republicans took over the Senate in the past 2 years, his voting record on peace and disarmament issues plummeted to 8 and 9% respectively. And as Bill noted, voting for these absurd increases in military spending, particularly Strom Thurmond's amendment, which I believe would have added 90 $72.3 billion to the six-year military plan. So I agree with Bill, hands down, and I don't think there's going to be anything but trouble for those of us who are trying to cut military spending or stop new weapons development if Bill Cohen is Secretary of Defense.
Gordon, what about Madeleine Albright? It looks like smooth sailing for her. Senate Majority Leader Trent Lott predicts that the Senate will overwhelmingly confirm her today as the first female Secretary of State. She was overwhelmingly or unanimously approved by the Foreign Relations Committee, where Chair Jesse Helms called her a tough and courageous lady.
Well, I'm not sure I would agree with the tough and courageous label. I think she's been very willing to carry the administration's water in the United Nations, and particularly when the administration has been carrying the reactionary rights water and such things as essentially hounding Boutros-Ghali out of his position as Secretary General. We had certainly hoped in the peace movement that one of the things that she would be good on was the landmines issue. Because, in fact, she has witnessed close up through all the work that the UN has done, the sheer horror of these weapons. Unfortunately, you know, days before her final confirmation is expected, Clinton announces the fact that he's going to go with the much, much slower process of going through the UN Conference on Disarmament to try and get a landmines ban, as opposed to going with the Canadian initiative, which promises a ban within about a year on all anti-personnel landmines. So I can certainly say that she's much better than the last female UN ambassador we had that I can recall, Jean Kirkpatrick, but I don't think that she promises much change in the State Department, either on issues like landmines or on things like weapon sales and the State Department's help in that.
Bill Hartung, comments on Madeleine Albright?
Well, she made one strong statement to the New York Times Magazine sometime back about the horrors of the arms trade and how we must do something about that. You know, we should call her on that. We should push her on that. But a lot of times when U.S. officials talk about the horrors of the arms trade, they're talking about Russian arms sales, Chinese arms sales, French arms sales. They never take responsibility for U.S. arms sales, which are, you know, we're selling more weapons than every other country in the world combined. So unless she really makes a strong attempt to change the direction of Clinton policy on arms sales, you know, a few statements about how horrible it is not really going to have an impact on anybody's lives, either here or around the world.
Do you think, as a result of Madeleine Albright, we'll see U.S. payment to the United Nations?
There may be some plan to make good on some of those payments, but it'll probably come with additional demands from the U.S. About various reforms in the U.N. So I think if Clinton comes up with a plan to pay the debt, you know, she'll be a good soldier. She'll fight, you know, the right wing on it and make it happen. But I don't think it's going to be done in a way that's really going to bring about a cooperative spirit at the UN. The UN has really been had the U.S. kind of, you know, blatantly calling the shots lately in a way that it really does not, you know, bode well for cooperation among nations.
I want to talk about cooperation amongst military contractors. In fact, more than that, the mergers. We all know Lockheed Martin, of course. It was Lockheed and Martin Marietta. Now we've got Boeing and McDonnell Douglas just around Christmas time announcing that they're merging. We also have Texas Instruments, the military part of them, being bought by Raytheon, and now the merging of Raytheon and Hughes Defense, a part of General Motors. I mean, it's absolutely incredible. What's happened to antitrust laws in this country?
Well, you can't tell the players without a scorecard anymore in the defense industry, and it really has to do with the Clinton administration having a conscious strategy of encouraging mergers in the defense industry. The Justice Department and the FTC are basically any defense merger seems to be okay with them, with minor modifications, you know, throw off a satellite unit here, make a little change there. Also, they've been subsidizing these things. They've been helping these companies pay executive bonuses, golden parachutes, cost of closing down plants. And this was a policy that Bill Perry and John Deutsch at the Pentagon put together at the behest of Norman Augustine, then of Martin Marietta, now head of Lockheed Martin. And their argument was, well, you know, we're going to have a leaner, meaner defense industry that'll be cheaper for the Pentagon, cheaper for taxpayers. In fact, these people have been lining their pockets. They're making record profits. And now you've got two or three big companies that are going to be running the show in defense. You're going to have the Raytheon, Hughes, Texas Instruments conglomerate, Boeing, McDonnell Douglas, Lockheed Martin. Between them, they're probably going to get one out of every $4 that the Pentagon hands out. They're going to have tremendous leverage to do all kinds of cost overruns, price gouging, windfall profits, and the Pentagon's going to have very little leverage now that they've created this monster. We're going to have to pay the price.
By the way, where did former Defense Secretary William Perry and former CIA agent, former CIA head John Deutsch, where have they gone?
I don't know what their next step is. I would be very surprised if they didn't do some kind of consulting related to the defense industry. Perry had his own company prior to becoming Secretary of Defense. Both of them had lucrative consulting arrangements with Norm Augustine when he was head of Martin Marietta. And actually, their ability to approve these bonuses and these restructuring payments for defense mergers should have been called out of account simply because they had a business relationship with the person that was asking for that favor. And under conflict of interest rules, unless they had been given a waiver, which they were, they had no right to even be involved in giving out that money.
Well, Gordon Clark, is there any way to reverse it? You are head of Peace Action, which is the largest grassroots peace organization in this country, a group of activists around the country, both around these mergers that are not yet finalized, but also around, for example, this law that got Norman Augustine millions of dollars of taxpayer money as a bonus for merging Lockheed and Martin Marietta and resulted in the loss of tens of thousands of jobs.
Is a way to reverse it, although it's not going to be a speedy reversal. Our forte and what we think needs to happen is to really get an outraged citizenry understand how our money is being flushed down a toilet at the Pentagon, well, or more specifically being used to line the pockets of corporate CEOs that work with the Pentagon. There are two things that we're going to be working on over the next year or two. One of them, we will certainly be supporting legislation, which I think the Progressive Caucus and members thereof is going to be bringing up in Congress. One of them, for instance, in February, I know that Peter DeFazio of Oregon and Bernie Sanders of Vermont are going to be reintroducing their bill to overturn the Pentagon policy, to stop the Pentagon policy of subsidizing these military corporate mergers, and certainly to stop what we refer to as layoff payoff, or the practice of actually giving bonuses to the same CEOs who are laying off workers when they merge companies. We're also going to be working with members of the Progressive Caucus and folks out in the community in terms of the military spending, and it looks as, for the first time at least in a few years, the Progressive Caucus is really going to make a fight about the military budget, which, as I'm sure most of your listeners know, has actually gone up the past 2 years. At the same time, all this hue and cry over budget cutting has made all the other programs, domestic programs, suffer significant hits. And then the third thing that we're going to be doing is we are going on the road. We are developing right now a road show, which is tentatively titled Incredible Feats of Stupidity, which I think is about as apt a name for what's been going on at the Pentagon with our tax dollars as I can think of. And it's going to be almost a carnival-like production in which people are given tax dollars when they walk into a carny tent and they discover through the whole crooked process how their money is actually taken from them, again to line the pockets of corporate CEOs. We're going to be doing this around the country, and if there are people, I don't know if this is too early in the show to do a plug and give a phone number.
No, go ahead.
Okay. If there are people around the country who'd like to join us in this work, which again is going to be absolutely critical if there's going to be any change whatsoever in the policies that are going on right now and the levels of military spending that we're seeing, they can certainly give Peace Action a call, and our number is 1-800-228-1228. That's 1-800-228-1228. And we'll let you know where the incredible feats of stupidity is coming close to you or how you can join us in the lobbying efforts that we're going to be doing on the layoff payoff bill and the other legislation around military spending that will be brought up this year.
Well, just before we go, I want to ask William Hartung if you could give a quick comment on this issue of the expansion of NATO pushing right up against the borders of Russia.
Well, nothing good's going to come of that. It's the most likely way to reignite an arms race with Russia, which is one of the stupidest things that we could do at this point in time. Russia has cut back dramatically on weapons spending. They can barely feed their own troops. They couldn't even deal with military issues within their own borders in Chechnya, much less threaten the United States around the world. This is no time to be getting the backs up of militants in Russia by expanding NATO and sending weapons into East and Central Europe, which is the plan of the Clinton administration. I think we should be speaking out as strongly as we can against that kind of option because it's the most likely thing to bring back some version of the Cold War, which is the last thing I think we want at this point in our history.
William Hartung, is there a number that people can call or possibly a site on the web where people can go to get information that the World Policy Institute puts out on all of these issues, from NATO to the military mergers to the confirmation hearings and the confirmation of William Perry, rather William Cohen and Madeleine Albright?
Yes, we've got a couple reports, one on welfare for weapons dealers, one on campaign contributions by major arms exporting firms, and information on these other issues as well. People can call us at 212-229-5808 if they're interested in information packet or one of those reports.
That's 212-229-5808. Are we seeing the payoff that President Clinton is giving to his campaign contributors? Who are the top military?
Lockheed Martin gave $1.6 million to Republicans and Democrats for the 96 elections, and they're going to do very well these next 2 years if we don't stand up and stop them.
Well, I want to thank you very much for being with us, William Hartung of the World Policy Institute, based here in New York City, and Gordon Clark, director of Peace Action, based in Washington, D.C. Thanks for being with us. You're listening to Democracy Now! Coming up, we're going to hear about the unprecedented act of the House and the reprimand and fining of the House Speaker, Newt Gingrich. But before that, we're going to go to head of the Planned Parenthood Federation of America to talk about this morning's bombing of a Planned Parenthood clinic in Washington, D.C. Stay with us. You're listening to Democracy Now!, the exception to the rulers. I'm Amy Goodman. As we reported earlier in the show, an explosion went off just outside a Planned Parenthood clinic in the heart of downtown Washington, D.C., less than a mile from the White House. Police say that some sort of device held by a man outside the clinic exploded at about 7:45 Eastern Standard Time. Meanwhile, anti-abortion protesters are gathering in Washington today for their annual march protesting the Supreme Court's legalization of abortion. Roe versus Wade happened on this day 24 years ago. Joining us right now to talk about these late-breaking developments, Gloria Felt. She is president of the Planned Parenthood Federation of America. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Thank you, Amy.
Well, can you tell us the latest you have heard about this clinic, what looks like a clinic bombing in Washington, D.C.?
From what we understand, a man came up to the clinic with an explosive device in his hands. He aimed to throw the device. It exploded in his hands. There was no one injured at the clinic, which is very fortunate because patients were there, staff was there, and it could have been a devastating, devastating situation. The man fled and has not yet been apprehended.
Hmm. Now, we understand it's, what, 4 or 5 blocks from the White House?
It is.
And today, Vice President Gore and Hillary Clinton are expected to be at a NARAL luncheon today?
That is my understanding, mm-hmm. Yes, for the National Abortion Rights Action League.
Well, what is happening? In this last week, we've seen the bombing of the Women's Health Clinic in Atlanta, then the bombing of the Women's Health Clinic in Tulsa, and that also had been targeted January 1st in another firebombing. And now we see what's happening today. Is it because it's the 24th anniversary of Roe versus Wade? I mean, it doesn't happen every anniversary.
Well, it's because there are people out there who will stop at nothing, religious political extremists who will stop at nothing, even violence, to impose their views on all the rest of us. There are extremists who don't want women to have the right to choose to determine their own reproductive destiny. That's why it's happening.
And so what is Planned Parenthood going to do right now? I mean, in light of all of this that's happening, is there some sort of legislation that can be introduced? For example, is the federal government providing security around the country at women's health clinics?
Well, the federal law enforcement has sprung into action very quickly on all of these cases, and we're very heartened by the federal law enforcement response in Atlanta and Tulsa, and I'm sure it will be the same in Washington, D.C. But much more needs to be done, and I think that state and local governments as well are going to have to be much more responsive, because the fact of the matter is that people who've been responsible for many of the attacks, bombings, and shots fired at women's health providers in the past few years are still at large, and there really has to be a renewed effort to bring them to justice. So it's also time, in my view, for law enforcement, the media, and the public to understand that these are not isolated incidents. These violent acts are not isolated incidents. They are part of an ongoing campaign of domestic terrorism aimed at ending access to abortion and family planning.
And if it is, if this is a clear-cut, I guess you could call it, conspiracy around the country to attack women's health clinics, what does that mean if it falls under the category of domestic terrorism? I know that when the churches were being burned around the South, that was also a major issue, that it be classified as domestic terrorism.
Yes, and I think we saw people spring into action very quickly around that. That's what should happen around these bombings of women's health clinics. Believe me, if it had been police stations that had been bombed, if it had been any other institutions of society that had been bombed, I think everybody in the community would be joining hands together to say, enough, we don't want this. We don't want this kind of violence in our community. That's how it should be with women's health centers, and that's how I believe it will be. One of the things Planned Parenthood is doing and we had already planned to do this before this bombing happened today, by the way, is to launch a purple ribbon with a key campaign as a symbol of the fact that keeping women's health centers safe and open is key. And we're going to urge people to wear the purple ribbon and the key as that symbol, and to show that until violence and terrorism against women's health centers has been eradicated.
For people who are around the country right now and are very concerned about what's going on, about the possibility that this is a wave, it's not really the first, because, in fact, you all just had a news conference last week. A number of the women's groups, including the National Abortion Federation, including the Feminist Majority and Planned Parenthood, where the different representatives were talking about the continued violence against clinics, something that is not in the news very much. The only thing we do hear is when there's an actual firebombing of a clinic. We don't hear when a doctor is knifed, as recently happened, or when doctors are shot at, that kind of thing.
Yes, I think that unfortunately what happens when there's a whole progressive spate of these kinds of violent acts is that they become less and less news as time goes on. And so we really hope that the media will do more to report all of the attacks, not just the most dramatic ones, because people don't necessarily understand that this is an ongoing campaign that must be addressed in very serious ways.
Would you like to see Janet Reno set up a kind of a women's health clinic task force in the same way that they set up for the burned churches?
I think it would be very appropriate for the Justice Department to do something highly visible of that nature, and I certainly think that it would help to give the message that the administration is serious about this, the Justice Department is serious about this, law enforcement throughout the country is serious about bringing to justice anybody who bombs or otherwise creates violence around a women's health center.
Anti-abortion protesters are gathering in Washington today for their annual march protesting the Supreme Court's legalization of abortion. Are there going to be women's pro-choice activists also outside the Supreme Court today honoring Roe versus Wade?
We have other things that we're going to be doing today. In Planned Parenthood affiliates across the country, there are luncheons, there are vigils, there are speak-outs, there are various different kinds of activities commemorating the Roe v. Wade anniversary. And I think that's appropriate because this is an issue that is nationwide, not just in the nation's capital, and it is women across the United States who have need for reproductive health services. So that's how Planned Parenthood is dealing with it, and many other pro-choice organizations are hosting various kinds of events as well. Certainly the violence that has been experienced this week will add a poignancy and I think an ever greater sense of commitment to our belief that a woman, not the government, should be able to make decisions about personal reproductive issues.
Gloria Felt, as we wrap up, is there a phone number people can call if they want to get involved with supporting women's health clinics and protecting women's health clinics? I know that Planned Parenthood does have a website.
Yes, we do. Thank you very much for mentioning it. Planned Parenthood does have a website, and information about Planned Parenthood and all of these issues is readily available through that website. And I would suggest that people who would like to get involved can simply look up Planned Parenthood in the white pages and find their local Planned Parenthood affiliate and offer to help, because those are the people who are really on the front lines. They can help with their checks. They can help with their time. They can help with their letters and words to their members of Congress and to the media and to law enforcement as well.
And do you know your Planned Parenthood web address? Is it PPFA?
You're asking me a very difficult question.
Well, I think people can put, I think people can put Planned Parenthood into a search engine,
yes,
and you'll probably
so.
Find
people who are more adept at the World Wide Web than I am can probably find it rather easily.
Well, I want to thank you very much for joining us. Gloria Felt is the new head of the Planned Parenthood Federation of America. And again, the latest news is that an explosion has just gone off outside of a Planned Parenthood clinic in downtown Washington, D.C., just 4 or 5 blocks from the White House. They can see the White House from the clinic. This follows 2 other bombings in the last week, one of an Atlanta clinic and one of a Tulsa clinic. You're listening to Democracy Now!
I've been waiting for something to happen, for a week or a month or a year, with the blood and the ink of the headline and the sound of the crowd in my ear. You might ask what it takes to remember when you think that you've heard it before, how governments lie to their people and how nations are driven to war. There are shadows on the faces of the men who fan the flame. To those wars that have fought in places we can't even remember their name. On the radio, talk shows, and TV, you hear one thing again and again: how the USA stands for freedom and how we come to the aid of a friend. Well, who are these ones we call our friends? These governments killing their own? Or is it the ones you can't take anymore, so they pick up a brick or a gun or a stone?
And you're listening to Democracy Now! Yesterday, for the first time in congressional history, the Speaker of the House of Representatives was fined $300,000 and formally reprimanded for violating House rules. Lawmakers voted overwhelmingly, 395-28, to accept the House Ethics Committee's recommendation that Newt Gingrich be punished for using tax-exempt organizations to advance the political agenda of the Republican Party. He was also reprimanded for making inaccurate and false statements to the Ethics Committee. Today, we're going to bring you highlights of yesterday's debate on the House floor, and we'll also be joined by Jeffrey Klein once again, who has been following Newt Gingrich for many years and who will join us to talk about the implications of this vote. Jeffrey Klein, the editor of Mother Jones Magazine. But first, we turn to Congressmember David Hobson, who's a Republican from Ohio, who summed up yesterday on the House floor the Republican arguments for Newt Gingrich.
After reviewing the Speaker's case and examining House precedents on sanctions, I believe that the sanction was more harsh than the charges in the case warrant. For the record, I'm submitting a memo which outlines the rules and precedents on disciplinary sanctions. I believe a careful reading of this memo supports my conclusion. But the Speaker accepted the charges and the sanction against him, and I believe that demonstrates to all of us and the American public that he truly regretted his actions and sends a message that the Speaker's conduct should be held to a particularly high standards, as should every other member's. But there's another message in this for all of us as members. The reimbursement of $300,000 sets a new standard for the ethics process. Some may disagree with that. It says that those who create additional and unnecessary work for the committee are going to pay a price. This should also alert those members who trump up charge after charge and file frivolous complaints with the ethics committee that they may be held to a similar monetary standard. There have been numerous allegations and charges filed against Mr. Gingrich over the past few years, and they've been investigated by the Ethics Committee at an enormous cost to the taxpayers. All of these cases have either been deemed minor or dismissed except for the current issue. This leads me to believe that somewhere out there...
Time has expired.
Need additional 2 minutes.
I yield the gentleman such time as he may require.
Gentleman's yielded additional time as he requires.
This leads me to believe that there's an orchestrated effort by certain opposition forces, some even involving tax-exempt organizations, to attack the Speaker. And the attacks didn't stop with the Speaker. For the first time in my career on the committee, there's been a relentless attack on members who serve on the Ethics Committee, including myself. I've served on the Ethics Committee for six long years. And it was not until we handled the Speaker's case that I experienced and saw the attacks on members of the Ethics Committee from other members and outside groups, which I might add, by the way, also included certain tax-exempt groups. Intense political pressure was brought to bear on the members purely for the reason that they served on the Ethics Committee. These and other distractions were detrimental to the entire process. Had these actions and certain other committee problems not occurred, this case could have been resolved much earlier and been far less disruptive to the House and the American people. It troubles me that this case brought out the worst partisan rancor and resulted in inappropriate actions of certain members. But at the same time, I'm pleased that this case has been resolved in a bipartisan manner, and we can move forward in the House and do the work that the people sent us here to do. In closing, as I stated earlier, I believe the committee's sanction was more harsh than the charges warranted. But I will vote for the resolution because it was the bipartisan decision reached by the committee and agreed to by Mr. Gingrich. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
And that was Republican David Hobson from Ohio. We now turn to New York Democrat Charles Rangel.
I gather that most of the members, Democrat and Republican, are very anxious to put the heat and passion of our partisanship behind us and to get on and legislate as the American people would want us to do. God knows I've contributed my share toward that heat and passion and make no apologies for my partisanship. But we can't have it both ways. We can't say that he pled guilty but he didn't do anything. And for those people who want to pursue outside issues, I beg them not to think about doing it. If you want to investigate who was coercing members of the committee, then maybe we'll investigate who asked them how they were going to vote on the question of Speaker. Who's talking about taxes? The Ethics Committee had no right to go into tax issues. That's for the Internal Revenue Service. That's for the Federal Bureau of Investigation. And they have the responsibility to do that. The Speaker's intelligent. He's an intellectual. He read the charges. He said he brought discredit upon this House. For God's sake, let's get on with it.
The gentleman from Maryland.
Mr. Speaker, I would yield 1 minute to the distinguished gentleman from Ohio, Mr. Traficant.
The gentleman from Ohio, Mr. Traficant, is recognized for 1 minute.
That's Democrat James Traficant.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I salute the Republicans for their loyalty to their Speaker and their unity. The facts are clear, Democrats. 7 years ago, the Democrats abandoned Jim Wright. Today, the Republicans rescue Newt Gingrich. I commend you. Let me say this. The bottom line, folks, is this is not rotary. This is politics. And if Democrats are going to win back the majority, I think we should not only do that, but maybe spend a little bit of time on creating jobs in the country that might serve a better purpose. I want to close today by commending all of the leaders and all of the members of the committee. You are to be commended. I'll support your decision. But let me say this. I hope that today's events serve to bring some form of historical fairness and perspective to our fine former Democrat Speaker, Jim Wright. And with that, I yield back the balance of my time.
And when we come back, we're going to hear from House Majority Whip Tom DeLay going at it with Benjamin Cardin, who is the leading Democrat on the House Ethics Committee since Jim McDermott was forced to step down. You're listening to Democracy Now! We'll be back in 60 seconds. You're listening to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman as we continue to bring you excerpts of the floor debate yesterday in the House over the sanction for Newt Gingrich. And yes, it's an unprecedented act that the House took yesterday, the first time in congressional history. The Speaker of the House of Representatives was fined $300,000 and formally reprimanded for violating House rules. Just before we go to Jeffrey Klein, editor of Mother Jones Magazine, we're going to bring you the interaction between Republican Tom DeLay of Texas and Benjamin Cardin, a Democrat from Maryland. We'll begin with Tom DeLay, the House Majority Whip.
Thank you, and I thank the chairman for giving me the time. You know, last week, Mr. Speaker, I was prepared to vote for a reprimand. But then I found out that it's more than a reprimand. It is now a reimbursement plus a reprimand. And I cannot take what I was going to take, a political decision, when I feel very strongly, that it's not right. Now, I have the greatest respect for the chairwoman of the Ethics Committee, Nancy Johnson, and I appreciate all the hard work that the committee has put into this recommendation. But I must agree with my colleague from Texas, Mr. Smith, the only member of the committee who voted against that recommendation. I believe that this punishment is too harsh, given the history of the ethics process and the precedents of earlier punishments. Such a punishment is not only unprecedented and can be levied on every one of us, it is unwarranted. I will not vote to reprimand Newt Gingrich for transgressions that in the past have only warranted either warnings or letters of reproval from the Ethics Committee. Now, I understand the Speaker's noble motivations in working out a settlement in this case, and I understand why and how the committee came to this end and the Speaker came to this end. But you got to put it in perspective. Minority Leader Mr. Gebhardt received a letter from the Ethics Committee for falsely giving false information to the committee, not intentionally. The chairman of the DCCC received a letter from this Ethics Committee because he did not intentionally use a federal employee for campaign purposes. Those are letters of reproval, and I submit that both of those actions are worse than what Newt Gingrich has owned up to. Now, what kind of violations have this House put reprimands on members? Hiring the wrong lawyer? Being sloppy about submissions to the committee? No. Reprimands such as using political influence to fix parking tickets for personal friends. Reprimands or recommendation of reprimand by the committee for improper sexual relationships with pages. A reprimand for intentionally lying to the committee. And this committee has not found this speaker has intentionally lied or intentionally misled the committee. This is, I say to the gentlewoman from California, Mr. Speaker, this is about power. This is about some on this side have lost power and they're trying to regain it by abusing the ethics process and this institution. That's what this is all about. And so I don't agree that the speaker should be held to a higher standard. All of us, every member should be held to the highest of standard. And this speaker, like any other member, should not be held to a double standard. This is a double standard that we're imposing on this speaker. In fact, we know it because this speaker has been prodded and probed from every direction. Since 1989, he's had over 500 ethics charges brought against him. In the last 2 years, he's had 74 ethics charges brought against him. You know what? He has not been brought, nothing's been brought to this floor to bring a sanction against anything that he's been charged with. What he's being charged with today is during the process he happened to screw up. That's what's going on here. And I just find that really sad that we have abused the process like this. This speaker has been put, has had every detail. Could I have just 30 seconds?
I yield the gentleman 30
seconds. The gentleman's recognized for 30 seconds.
This speaker has had every detail of his life examined under a microscope. And that microscope has exposed some flaws, some sloppiness, some things that it should have been done better. But it has not exposed corruption or lawlessness or personal profit. And that's what reprimand and censures are all about. The highest possible standard does not mean an impossible standard that no American could reach. Let's stop using the ethics process for political vendettas.
Time
Let's not create precedents that will only serve to undermine the service of this country. Let's stop this madness. Let's stop the cannibalism.
That
the
was
gentleman from Maryland
House Majority Whip Tom DeLay, now Democrat Benjamin Cardin,
yields himself the balance
leading
of the time.
Democrat on the House Ethics Committee yesterday on the House
Six
floor.
Minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I agree with the chairlady of our committee. These are very tough penalties, and the violation of the rules justify these tough sanctions. The sanctions are being recommended not because Mr. Gingrich is the Speaker of the House. They're being recommended because Mr. Gingrich is a member of this House. These sanctions would be appropriate for any member of this House who committed the violations that have now been established by the Ethics Committee and have now been admitted to by Mr. Gingrich. Mr. Gingrich made a decision that any member has the right to make. He's admitted to the charges. He's done that in order to avoid the necessity of a trial. That's his decision, and one in which I think we all must respect. But the underlying facts as to why this sanction is so severe, I think will become obvious to any one of us if we will read the report of the special counsel, which now has been approved not only by the bipartisan investigative committee, but by the full ethics committee. It points to the fact that this was not a college course. It was a course conceived within a political movement. Read page 39 and 40 of the report. 38 and 39, thank you. It was conceived in a political movement. It was conceived as the only way, according to Mr. Gingrich, to get the message out, to get the political message out. I appreciate the comments of my colleague from Maryland, Mr. Gilchrist. But you don't use tax-exempt organizations to get a political message out. And I appreciate the comments of Mr. Smith about the meeting of tax lawyers. In all due respect, this report was just released 4 days ago. The facts and circumstances are just now known to the American people. The political motivation and the action on that political motivation is now just known by the American people. Mr. Gingrich commingled tax-exempt organizations with his political agenda. He did it because he couldn't raise enough money in the political PACs. That's part of our record. This was a new way to raise money, a new avenue in which he could promise his contributors a tax exemption to boot. That's wrong. He did it because he needed the money in order to get his political message out, and that is wrong. There's ample evidence here that the tax laws were violated, and it's not a close case. But we don't need to reach that conclusion. As the special counsel's report concludes, this is a bipartisan conclusion. Mr. Gingrich should have sought tax advice, and the reason he didn't seek that tax advice was either that he knew it would be wrong and he didn't want to get that advice, or he was reckless in his conduct. Make no mistake about this, this is reckless conduct, at least reckless conduct, over a long period of time, dating back 5 years, involving four tax-exempt organizations, costing taxpayers hundreds of thousands of dollars of legitimate tax needs. But there's more to this case than just the tax issues. We have letters that misled the Ethics Committee. As the special counsel has pointed out, there is ample evidence, there is significant evidence here that he intentionally did this. No, we don't reach that conclusion. The record was frozen by his admission. But we do reach the conclusion that this was either intentional conduct to mislead this House and the ethics process, or it was reckless conduct. Now, that's more than innocent mistakes. We've reached conclusions that these are not just innocent mistakes. Mr. Gingrich's explanation that he is sensitive to the ethics process, he was embarrassed, and he came forward as soon as he knew that they were in an error, just doesn't wash with the record that's been presented to you today. There's more to it than that. And the special counsel's record reflects that. And we need to take cognizance of that. So we have a series of conduct that was either reckless or intentional. And it cost this House and our reputation dearly. And that's why the sanction is before you. Not because he's Speaker of the House, but because a member of the House has brought disgrace to this chamber. I am proud of the fact that we have a bipartisan recommendation here today. That's very important. The process has worked. Democrats and Republicans have come together and have performed one of their most important constitutional responsibilities, to judge the conduct of our own members. And we've done that. And we've reached an agreement. And the agreement is right. And Mr. Gingrich has agreed on that assessment. And now it's time for us to do right as a full House. It's time for us to support the recommendations of the Ethics Committee, to send a very clear message that every member of this House must adhere to the highest standards when it comes to their personal conduct that can bring discredit to this House, and to their conduct with the Ethics Committee in the information that they make available to our committee. I urge my colleagues to support this recommendation. Let's approve it overwhelmingly, and yes, then let's get on with the business of this House, Democrats and Republicans working together to do the people's business. I yield back the balance of my time.
The gentleman yields back the balance of his time.
And that was Congressman Benjamin Cardin, Democrat of Maryland, also the ranking member on the House Ethics Committee, the only one to get applause yesterday. As the House voted in an unprecedented act, first time in congressional history, Speaker of the House of Representatives fined $300,000 and formally reprimanded for violating House rules. In a strongly worded report, the special counsel, James M. Cole, a lifelong Republican, concluded that Newt Gingrich violated tax law and lied to the committee. But the subcommittee wouldn't go that far in exchange for the investigative subcommittee agreeing to modify the charges against him, essentially a plea bargain agreement. Gingrich agreed to the penalty December 20th as part of a deal in which he admitted guilt. And that is what the Republicans and Democrats voted on yesterday. Joining us right now to talk about the implications of all this and what all it meant that was said yesterday is Jeffrey Klein, and he's editor of Mother Jones Magazine. He joins us from Berkeley, California. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Jeffrey.
Good morning, Amy.
Well, before we get your overall comment, what about your reaction to some of the things that people like Republican David Hobson and Rangel and James Traficant and Benjamin Cardin and Tom DeLay said?
They're kind of funny in a way. I mean, first of all, Hobson was a member of the Ethics Committee. They took him off and they put Lamar Smith on. He was Newt's main shill on the committee before he was seen after committee hearings running up to Newt's office, and they just thought Smith could do a better job. But he laid out basically the plea bargain of the plea bargain of the plea bargain, which is Smith did a couple of days ago, which is said nothing's been admitted to really. In fact, many things had been admitted to. They just plea bargained it down. He talked very disingenuously about attacks on the Ethics Committee when, in fact, Newt, in a document that had been released over the weekend, had precisely orchestrated these, including the postponement of special counsel for one full year. And Newt himself had said in his group, let's go after the people who are against us on that Ethics Committee. So that's completely inappropriate. And then the main sort of Newtonian logic is that you kind of alchemize your guilt into something noble. So they turn Newt into, even though he didn't do anything, he's admitting to this because he wants a harder standard, and he wants even law on behalf of that harder standard, which is this loser's pay thing, which they're trying to come up into it. And then DeLay picked up the political message, which I thought was very subtle but important, in that he played to the base, which is the Christian coalition. He's going for leadership should Newt fail, and that's why he threw in that House Page thing. He says, you know, the other side is full of gays who have affairs with, you know, pages on the floor, and that's to the Christian coalition, which is the other organized base in the Republican Party. And if Newt's own group is floundering, then DeLay is saying, hey, I'm one of you in the Christian coalition. So the whole thing was weak, and it's shown by the fact that it only attracted 26 votes. What I thought was quite interesting, though, in Hobson's remarks, and it was subtly peppered throughout the whole day, was this 300,000, which Boehner broke from the group saying, you know, Newt could pay it. I wouldn't be against it on moral or legal grounds. It just would be politically wrong. He sort of took the Dole position for his own sake in leadership, saying, don't do this, Newt. Pay it personally, or this thing's going to be back in the news. And what's Hobson's and other people's reply? Hey, this could apply to you. They've actually, the Republicans had a meeting yesterday. They said, hey, guys, we could end up paying this kind of money out of our pocket, too. So there's a lot of personal fear that they all have that they'll be liable for fines, which, of course, the American public would want. On the Cardin side, I thought he gave a repeat very eloquently of the reason the committee had come to its conclusion. You have to keep in mind Cardin was the moderate in many ways on this committee. He voted for letters of reproof earlier to Newt. You know, it's also a complete lie that Newt hadn't been formally punished by the Ethics Committee. They'd been in terms of letters on his book, for example, and so on. And Cardin has always been the moderate voice. He was a former speaker of the Maryland State Legislature, and he's looking for bipartisanship. Underneath this bipartisanship, though, something else has happened, which is, as I said, Newt transformed the House into a parliamentary system where it was cohesive, much more powerful than either the Senate or the White House for a while. It was at the cost, of course, of giving power to Newt. And now with Newt losing power, we're going to go back much more to the old system, which prevailed in our history much more often, where these committee chairs have had power. But the net result is the House is going to have less power than the Senate and less power than the White House. And so some of what you're hearing here is let's be bipartisan so we can pass legislation is a kind of bemoaning that they all have, that each congressperson, Democrat and Republican, is going to have less power as a result of this, because it's confirmed in the American public's mind that on the whole, it takes an awful lot to get a guy punished. And on the whole, these representatives have a crooked system going, because after all, Newt spun this thing for several weeks as a traffic ticket. He lied to the press. The press largely bought his lie. And the public doesn't come out of this with a renewed respect for Congress. It comes out with a renewed confirmation of its worst fears. And I think neither Democrats nor Republicans like that, because it means they'll be able to, you know, pay back their donors less than they would have before this had come. But on the whole, I think Cole's process was an honorable one, and the vote was overwhelming and historic.
Well, I want to thank you very much for that thumbnail analysis there, Jeffrey. And I want to add that there were 26 Republicans and 2 Democrats who voted against the reprimand of Speaker Newt Gingrich. The Democrats, Congressmembers Earl Hilliard of Alabama, Gene Taylor of Mississippi. Taylor said he wanted it specified that the $300,000 comes from personal funds, not from his campaign coffers. That's Newt Gingrich. And Maxine Waters voted present or not voting, and she said that she felt if all that was alleged was true, that the speaker should have been censured. Also, Jim McDermott didn't cast a vote, and Congressmember Conyers of Michigan. So thanks for being with us, Jeffrey Klein of Mother Jones Magazine. Democracy Now! Is produced by Dan Coughlin and Errol Maitland, our engineer Errol Maitland, and Kevin Cartwright out at KPFA. If you'd like a copy of today's show, you can call 1-800-735-0230. That's 1-800-735-0230. Julie Drizin is our executive producer. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for being with us.
stop forced relocation of traditional Diné Navajo elders.